Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of How's the Pressure? I am your host, Haley Winter, and today we'll be starting our conversation about fibromyalgia. So let me introduce our first set of panelists. The second set will be reserved for episode number 2 on this condition, which will be released in 2 weeks. But today, we start with Ruth Werner. She is an educator about massage therapy and pathology, who will help us set the foundation of understanding on a physiological level. She'll talk about what's actually happening on a tissue level with each individual who has this condition. Next, we have Whitney Lowe, our orthopedic massage expert, who has decades of experience in the clinical setting, as well as a treasure trove of CEU classes. He will be followed by Rick Gold, our Eastern medicine and bodywork specialist, who will be giving us his thoughts from his extensive experience working as an Eastern medicine doctor and acupuncturist, as well as a massage educator. He'll be followed by Walt Fritz, who is an evidence-based physical therapist specializing in myofascial release. Last but not least, we will wrap up with Meredith Stevens, who is a Pilates physical therapist and movement expert, as well as being a massage therapist and a trainer for Anatomy Trains. As usual, there's going to be a lot of different opinions and perspectives that will be shared over the course of this and upcoming episodes. I want to be clear that I'm not trying to put any one opinion over the other. I believe that my job is to bring experienced people together and ask them good questions. In 2 weeks, I'll release the second episode on fibromyalgia with a different set of panelists. Clearly, we have quite a bit to get to, so let's get right down to it. I bring you the first panel on fibromyalgia. All right, and as always, we are going to start with Ruth Werner, who's a massage therapy educator that specializes in pathology for massage therapists. And what she's going to do is she's going to help set up the context for this discussion around the particular condition and kind of lay the groundwork from where all the other conversations can take place. So thank you so much for joining me, Ruth.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here, Haley.
So let's lay the groundwork for fibromyalgia. That's our condition today.
I feel so lucky, Haley, to be able to talk to you and to all of our listeners about fibromyalgia. This is an extremely complicated condition that has a huge amount of misinformation circulating about it. And what I'm going to share with you, you know, in the amount of time we have to do this, will certainly not be comprehensive, but it might at least give some people some new understanding or some clearer understanding about what this thing is and what it's not. So I'm really happy to do that. And the first thing I'll say about talking about fibromyalgia is that way back when I was in massage school, we thought some things that were quite wrong. We thought that fibromyalgia and myofascial pain syndrome were the same thing. We did not delineate any kind of difference between tender points and trigger points. And we thought the way to deal with this was you found those little hard nodules and you laid into them as hard as you can. And you say, take a deep breath and think of Christmas. And then we would wonder why people weren't, you know, responding to this kind of work. And it's because we were making it much, much, much worse. In the first edition of my textbook, which came out in 1998, so this is 20 years ago, it's not all that long ago, I was really trying to figure out what's the difference between a tender point and a trigger point. And I found this obscure article in some obscure journal that said, well, they're kind of sort of the same thing. And I went like, oh, thank God. Okay, we'll just call that the same thing. And it's wrong. It's just wrong. It's not correct. And, you know, it's not that anyone was trying to be lazy or negligent. We just didn't understand. So now we have a much clearer idea about the differences between tender points, which is a phenomenon that we see with fibromyalgia, and trigger points, which is a phenomenon that we see with something else. And some people hate that term trigger point, and I'm just not even going to get into that debate right now. But they're not the same thing. However, a single person could have both of those symptoms and even in the same locations at the same time because life just isn't fair. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what fibro is. As we have learned more about this condition, even though its name means fibro muscle pain, which makes it sound like an orthopedic condition, we have come to realize really this is a central nervous system condition. This is a condition involving some phenomena in the nervous system called central sensitization. And I could do a whole lecture on that, but it's not the time. But basically what happens is, for a whole bunch of complex reasons, people's nervous systems get primed to convey messages about pain. So imagine a situation where you grow more nerve endings whose job is to tell you about threat. And your nervous system, your central nervous system, gets really adept at now interpreting any incoming sensation about texture, about pressure, about temperature, and to turn those into pain responses. Okay. And we can actually see these changes. We can see the growth of new neuronal endings in the central nervous system. And we can see a change in the kinds of neurotransmitters that people secrete when they live with chronic pain. And fibro is not the only chronic pain condition where this happens, but it's a good example of one. And so what we have here is a situation where a person's pain is real. I want to really emphasize that the pain is real, but the source of that pain is usually not in the shoulder or the hip or the neck or the back or the wherever. The source of that pain is a misinterpretation in the central nervous system. Did I just say you're making it up and it's all in your head? I did not. It's real. But the idea that we're going to fix it by addressing something out in the tissues is probably not realistic. So fibromyalgia, when we look at, you know, what it is and what it's not, I've just told you a lot about what it's not, right? It's not an orthopedic condition. It's not specifically cause and effect related to injury or muscle tears or trigger points or any of those things. It's a misinterpretation in the nervous system about incoming messages. And to date, the best way that we have to study what fibromyalgia really is to compare people who have it to people who don't. And when we do that, we find a few things that are pretty consistent. One is some differences in the kinds of neurotransmitters that they secrete, which I just mentioned, right? People who have fibro tend to secrete neurotransmitters that make people more likely to have pain responses to incoming stimuli. We also have some dysfunction in the HPA axis. Haley, when you went to massage school, did you learn something about called the HPA axis?
I did not.
Excellent. I love talking about the HPA axis. This stands for the linkage between the hypothalamus, the pituitary gland, and the adrenal glands. And it has to do with our stress response system. And what we see with fibromyalgia and some other conditions like chronic fatigue syndrome and even irritable bowel syndrome, these chronic pain things, is an HPA axis that's out of whack. So we tend to have more stress responses and big stress responses, even to little tiny stressors. And it takes longer for our body, particularly cortisol levels tend to climb. And it takes longer for our body to recuperate and to kind of come back to equilibrium. And you can imagine how exhausting this is. Then we add to that this central sensitization that we talked about with these actual physical changes in the central nervous system that make us more sensitive to or more likely to have pain responses. And then we have, two more things. One is a sleep disorder. And to me, this is, and everybody that I've ever talked to who has fibromyalgia, this is a real keystone to this condition. People who have fibromyalgia might get 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 hours of sleep. That's not the issue. The issue is when people with fibromyalgia wake up in the morning, one of the hallmarks of this condition is they don't feel rested. And what we see when we hook them up to the right kinds of equipment is that people who have fibro get little or no stage four sleep, which is the stage of sleep where we recover. Stage four sleep is when we secrete growth hormone to help us heal from all those little bangs and bumps and irritations that we accumulate over the course of a day. Imagine, you know, you have a hangnail and it's bugging you and you go to sleep. And when you wake up in the morning, it's mostly healed. But that's because of growth hormone. But people with fibromyalgia, they don't get that break, right? And so any little injury, any little bit of the wear and tear that we go through, that just lingers and lingers and lingers. And people wake up and they feel like they've been hit by a truck. And I'm emphasizing this point because this is maybe a place where massage therapy has an in this whole cycle, right? And then the last thing about fibro that is unique and quite mysterious is the development of these phenomena that we call tender points. And a tender point is a spot, it's usually in muscle tissue, but some of them are not. Some of them are in fat pads. Where the tissue it doesn't have normal tone or doesn't have normal texture. It feels like a soft spot on an apple or a bruised spot on a banana. That's another thing that delineates tender points from trigger points, which are hypertonic nodules. Tender points are like a bruised spot on an apple, right? They give too much. And when a person has a tender point and you palpate it with enough pressure to blanch your fingernail, and if you put your fingernail on your forearm and you press with enough pressure to kind of chase the blood out of the very tip, see how little pressure that is? That causes a person who has fibro to have a huge pain response, like a being hit by a bat kind of pain response. And so when we see the tender point map, what we see is a map of 9 symmetrically distributed tender points that are all over the body. It's a full body distribution. And those tender point maps are fairly consistent to the point where one of the differential diagnoses is if a person has a massive pain response to a spot that's not on the tender point map, then maybe we're not looking at fibro, maybe we're looking at something else.
Okay. And is it, you just say 9 points, like 9
specific
points?
9 pairs.
9 pairs.
9 pairs, yeah, okay. 18 points.
Wow.
Okay. So it used to be that the diagnostic criterion for fibro is that 11 out of those 18 points would get you that big pain response to that very small amount of pressure. Okay. And if you only had 10 painful tender points, then sorry, you don't get your fibromyalgia diagnosis, which is nonsense. You know, it was really that criterion was designed basically for research purposes, so that when we're comparing people who have fibro to people who don't, this is sort of the line in the sand, right? And more recently, and it's not even that recent, it's probably 8 or 10 years old now, we've abandoned the tender point criterion as the only diagnostic criterion for fibro. There are now a couple of extremely well-validated surveys on pain and quality of life that are now used to, and they're well validated and they're highly sensitive, which means this is a survey tool that gets very accurate results. And those are now the diagnostic tools used for fibromyalgia, because some people have virtually everything about fibro, but not the tender points.
Hmm.
Okay.
And so what are some of those tools? Like, what are some of those measurements?
Oh, it's a questionnaire.
It's a questionnaire.
Yeah. I think there are 2 questionnaires actually.
Okay.
Which I don't have. I don't have the names of them handy to me.
Okay.
Let's be aware that fibro can occur at the same time with a whole bunch of other conditions, which are also really hard to pin down. The overlap between fibro and irritable bowel, fibro and chronic fatigue is huge. More people have the symptoms of more than one of those things than have the symptoms of only one. And there's another one, chronic, give me a minute, PBS, painful bladder syndrome. That is also now we're looking at as part of the whole fibromyalgia family. And, you know, and what we're seeing here is people whose nervous systems are designed to sense pain. And so when we see commercials for medicines for fibromyalgia, those medicines, Lyrica, for instance, it's an anti-seizure medicine. What it does is it tamps down our responses to lots of things, but in particular to pain sensation. It works on an overreactive nervous system that wants to interpret all these incoming signals as pain signals. Okay. So there's a ton more. I mean, I actually have a 4-hour class in fibromyalgia that I won't make you sit through. There's lots more to say about this. But for me, the really interesting point, among a gazillion other interesting points, about fibromyalgia and bodywork modalities, is that we are one of the few interventions that people can use that's not drug-based that is probably going to help if we're careful. You know, there's no surgery for this. There's no repair for this. This is about helping a nervous system turn it down about 10 notches
so
that people can be, you know, can have a quality of life.
So how can we help, and what do we have to be careful of?
Yeah, well, so the main thing we have to be careful of is over-treating people, because this is a nervous system that is wired for pain. And so if we use that old-fashioned, take a deep breath, think of Christmas kind of trigger point, beat it into submission approach in massage therapy, that is exactly the opposite of what people with fibro need from us. What they need from us is massage of a kind of pressure that they welcome. And for some people, that's going to be light pressure on Tuesday and deeper pressure next Thursday. It's not always the same. We need to absolutely be versatile enough to meet people where they are on the day that they come see us. In addition, we want to try and provide for them an intervention that's really going to promote good quality sleep. But ultimately, what it takes to treat fibromyalgia is changes in lifestyle. And that means exercising to tolerance, but not past it. And that's a knife's edge. And it means eating well, which is really, you know, it sounds really easy to do, right? Exercise, eat right, get good quality sleep are probably the three hardest things there are to do all at the same time, you know, all on the same day. Right. When I do classes and I say, how many people here exercise more days than not? Most hands go up. How many people here get a minimum of 7 hours of sleep more days than not? Lots of hands go up. How many people eat what you think is a pretty satisfyingly healthy diet? Lots of hands go up. How many of you do all three of those things most days? Nada, you know, and we're the healthy ones, right? We're the ones who are supposed to be setting some kind of role model. For our clients, it's very hard to do that. And it's even harder to do that when you live in a body that does not feel like a happy place, right? When you live in a body that hurts all the time and you have the option, I could take a walk around the block. I know it would be good for me. Or I could eat the chocolate cake, which is sitting right here. Let me think for a second about which one of those is really a realistic expectation. And, you know, the happiest solution is to take a walk around the block and then you have a little chocolate cake, right? But my point is, these are hard, hard choices. We live in a society that does not promote or support our making those good choices. And massage therapy can be a way in. What the research says about massage for fibromyalgia is, generally, lighter pressure is better tolerated than deeper pressure. That's not a big surprise. Again, I want to emphasize that's not going to be true for every client on every day. And the other thing that we see in the literature, because there was a beautiful systematic review about this, is that people who have fibro begin to see the best results from massage therapy when they've had at least 5 treatments. And this can be a really useful thing to say to our clients who are getting really discouraged. Let's try this out. Let's just keep at it for a little while longer and then we'll reevaluate. But the other thing we really have to do for our people who have fibro or any chronic pain syndrome is to invite our clients to track their progress. And there's lots of ways to do this. My favorite when I was in practice was you know, you have a little figure on your intake form and you put red marks where there's pain. If you can show someone with fibro how red their figure was when they began to see you and how much less red there is over time, this is something that is extremely meaningful, because when you live in pain, it might not be as much pain as last week. Doesn't matter. It's still pain and it's still interfering in your quality of life. We need to help people sort of expand their quality of life so that the pain might not go away, but it can certainly become less important. It can be a smaller part of their life. I hope that makes some sense. I really have just dipped my toe into a huge ocean here. There's some wonderful, wonderful things that we can do for fibromyalgia. Don't be scared of it, but also don't fall in the trap of assuming it's just in their heads and they're just making it up. Hmm. If someone who has fibro has enough motivation to make and keep an appointment with us, they deserve the very, very best that we can bring to that table.
All right. Thank you so much, Ruth.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Ruth through her website at ruthwerner.com. You can also read her work in A Massage Therapist's Guide to Pathology, a book that she wrote, which is now published by Books of Discovery. All right. Now we're going to go ahead and turn to Whitney Lowe, who's an orthopedic massage specialist, to talk about his take on our condition of interest today. Thanks for joining us, Whitney.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. So talk to me a little bit about fibromyalgia.
Boy, this is a basket full of difficulty, I think, for most healthcare professionals, if we can name it something like that. Similar to a number of other conditions, one of the big problems with fibromyalgia is identifying what it actually is, and certainly now what causes it. You know, we know that it's a widespread body pain problem, and it certainly involves, you know, all different kinds of factors, some apparent metabolic things, sleep disorders, hormone triggers, and all kinds of things. But there is really a big question about what is the underlying physiology and pathology that leads to this. And that's, of course, a very important question, because that's what really directs our treatment choices for what we should be doing. And with massage in addressing fibromyalgia, one of the things that I think many practitioners find is that there is no sort of standard protocol that seems to work best, because some fibromyalgia clients like really deep work and they say that really helps them. Some of them, you know, can barely take any kind of pressure at all. And so this is one of those situations where the difficulty of the condition itself really produces a situation where the practitioner has to be quite skilled in getting outside the box and just saying what's going to be the unique individual treatment that's going to work for this particular person. And it's not going to be any kind of standard protocol that you look up in a book, because there is no really standard that works all the time.
Hmm. So it would stand to reason, if it's so varied in the client experience, as you said, that the treatment would be quite varied. I'm curious if there are any examples you know of people who believe they have fibromyalgia but instead have a well-known or a much more approachable musculoskeletal condition.
Well, I think that actually happens a lot, and this is to a large extent because of improper care in our healthcare system. For example, people don't get to spend a lot of time with their physicians just because of the nature of the way medical practice is performed. So a person comes in, let's say, and they have, you know, multiple areas of sort of widespread musculoskeletal pain that they're experiencing. If the doctor or physician either isn't really well experienced with understanding fibromyalgia or doesn't take the time to be thorough in an assessment and evaluation with them, oftentimes those people just get diagnosed with fibromyalgia and oftentimes put in this basket of, oh, this is kind of a problem patient. They just have fibromyalgia. I can't really do much for them. And so a lot of times those are people who just have chronic, you know, myofascial pain from, you know, trigger point and activity or excessive neurological irritation of muscles from all kinds of different triggers and factors. But fibromyalgia really seems to be something that lives on this spectrum. Like, you have this wide spectrum of musculoskeletal stress that can, you know, evolve into a long-term problem that can involve a number of other things that really does become more of that whole complex of fibromyalgia as opposed to just being, you know, the early stages of just musculoskeletal discomfort from stresses or nutritional things or, you know, sleep problems or that sort of thing.
And in your experience, does it start off as primarily myofascial or musculoskeletal difficulties or discomfort and then progress to the other stages?
I don't know where the starting point is, because what I think tends to happen for us is we see the people when they've come in with the musculoskeletal pain problem at that point. What we don't know is, was that really the beginning of it, or did it start with, hey, they haven't been sleeping well for 3 years and they have, you know, gluten allergy that they never diagnosed, or they have other things that are causing widespread systemic disorders, and now it's becoming symptomatic and musculoskeletal pain, and that's when we see them. So I think it's hard for us to know where they are landing, because people probably come into this at different, I've seen people appear to come at this from different stages and have things appear in different orders. So I don't know if I'm really confident saying that there really is a progressive stage that happens there, that we can sort of see, oh, they're at this stage and they're going to get, you know, going to get those symptoms later on.
Hmm. And do you have any memorable experiences in working with people that have fibromyalgia?
Yeah, quite a number of them. One really early on, it was quite striking that I remember, which is I had a client very early on in my practice who had been driving in a truck with her husband, and they had a terrible car accident, and their truck was actually carrying a couple of 55-gallon drums of battery acid, and in the accident, that battery acid spilled all over her, and this had been like 3 years earlier, so she had lots of skin damage, you know, superficial skin damage from the acid burns, and that started the progression of what became sort of a fibromyalgia complex of, you know, all those other things that are going along with it. And nobody told me anything in massage school about working with acid burn victims or any of that kind of stuff. You know, a lot of times we have these situations where we're just sort of thrust into a new clinical environment. We just have to think creatively and think clinically, well, what should I be doing here? So I just worked with her over the course of, you know, months, just very light work, very soothing stuff, but just getting her doing some things that were really helping her rest longer, helping her be able to sleep better and just decrease some of what seemed to be just the overall irritability of everything, because everything was, you know, putting on a rough sweater would set her off, or, you know, doing certain just basic kinds of movement things. And over the course of several months, we really just sort of turned down the volume on the irritability of the nervous system. And I would certainly by no means say that we cured the fibromyalgia that she had, or, you know, completely resolved it, but it did make a huge impact. I mean, she came in one day and just after the treatment just started crying, and she says, "I never thought that I could not have pain." And I said, "You know, this is great. You know, let's keep going in this direction." And so, those are the kind of things that, you know, you don't always get complete resolution of things, but you know that you're making a really significant impact on somebody's life and making things a whole lot better for them. And that's really good progress too.
And so was it really, in your opinion, mostly the light, it sounds like effleurage, relaxation techniques, that was the main impact you were having, or were there other techniques that you felt were having good effect?
Yeah, I think that was the most important thing that I was doing. I was doing basically some really light, you know, what we sort of call myofascial types of things, which is just sort of, you know, skin pulling and dragging and some superficial light effleurage. But, you know, somebody had it was either a t-shirt or a bumper sticker I saw one time at a massage convention. I thought, that is so spot on. I want to get a copy of that. It said, "Never underestimate the power of effleurage." And this is something that is really key, I think, because effleurage is introduced to us in massage school as the thing you do to get started, or the thing that you do to spread lotion on somebody. And then you move on to the really important stuff. And the key thing that I want to emphasize is that is a huge, powerfully, tremendously beneficial thing in terms of a technique, because it involves so much impact on the neurological system of mimicking things that are hardwired into our neurological system of comfort, touch, that works with, you know, descending modulation in the brain and all this other kind of stuff that we're now learning about the brain and pain science just from a good soothing, easing touch. And that's really helpful and powerful with people. So done in context, done in the healing context of your treatment room with the soft music, the light, you know, the soft lighting, the sounds, the smells, all of those other factors wrap up together to produce a powerful healing environment where just something like a good soothing, comforting touch can be hugely beneficial for somebody.
All right. Thank you, Whitney.
Well, you bet.
You can find out more about Whitney and the work that he's doing at the Academy of Clinical Massage. That's www.academyofclinicalmassage.com, where you can learn about this condition and many others. And now we're bringing in Rick Gold, who's our Eastern Massage and Chinese Medicine Specialist, to talk with us. Thanks for joining us, Rick.
My pleasure, Haley. I look forward to it.
So talk to me about your approach when working with fibromyalgia.
Very interesting question, Haley, because when I first studied Chinese medicine, starting in the late 70s, fibromyalgia was never taught because it had not been identified. It had not been labeled. It wasn't a phenomena. What corresponds to what we know as fibromyalgia in those older days was called neurasthenia, which is just like a weakening of the nerves. And a lot of the symptomatology we see besides physical pain with fibromyalgia fell under the heading of neurasthenia. There were hospitals where people with neurasthenia would go to take the cures and the rest and get out of the social environment that was causing them grief and aggravation. But now we know here in 2018 that fibromyalgia is a big phenomena. If you watch commercials on TV, there's major drug companies that are getting into the act of trying to treat it. Drugs that have dramatically negative side effects. The efficacy, I think, is limited to some people, and the long-term benefit, I highly question. So fibromyalgia, we have inflammation of connective tissue anywhere and possibly all over the body. These people ache all the time. It's often associated with chronic fatigue. It's often associated with depression, often associated with constipation. And a crucial thing, and it's not particular to Chinese medicine, but I think it's to integrative medicine, is irritable bowel syndrome. So in my clinical practice, I would say 99% of the people that have come to me to be treated for fibromyalgia, I detect that there's irritable bowel syndrome, where there's a history of dietary or digestive problems and elimination problems. Now, the thing about irritable bowel syndrome that we need to understand is when there's irritable bowel syndrome or inflammation of the mucosa or the lining of the bowel, this is a very, very thin lining. In most instances, it's only one cell width thick. I mean, it's really more not there than there. And so if that becomes irritated, and it could be irritated by gluten, especially if that's when people are gluten sensitive, it can happen from secondary effects of parasites that haven't been detected. Other things in the diet cause this kind of inflammation, food allergies. And when you have the inflammation in the bowel, the body's response to the inflammation is to infuse the bowel, the area of inflammation, with fluid. And what this does is then opens up even more space between cells of the bowel. And so now you can have not fully digested food and other pathogenic factors be absorbed into the lymph and bloodstream directly from the bowel. Now, these appear in the body then as foreign material, but they're not true antigens. So our immune system doesn't know what to do with them. And then this becomes a potentially autoimmune with some people, or it just creates an inflammatory process. So if we treat fibromyalgia by just chasing the pain around the body, you might give some temporary relief, but until you close off inflammation in the gut, you're just going to always be receding the inflammation in the tissue. Okay. So again, a lot of people with fibromyalgia are going to be touch adverse. They're really not going to want to be acupressured. And a lot of people aren't going to even want to have gentle circulatory massage, even though those would be beneficial because it helps break up the inflammation and stagnation in the tissue. But if the person is always in a hyper alert state of I'm about to receive more pain, more pain, more pain, producing more cortisol and a stress response, you're really not going to progress. So even though we're discussing this in the context of body work and massage, fibromyalgia is a very tricky one. With irritable bowel, the first thing to try to do is to eliminate inflammatory foods. And this can be done through just trial and error, muscle testing, checking a person's pulse, a single food diets. There's a variety of things that different practitioners use. One of the things I like to use with irritable bowel leading to fibromyalgia is have people drink aloe vera juice. Aloe vera is, we use it on the surface for burns because there's enzymes that in the aloe vera, which actually get rid of the digest bad tissue so new tissue can grow. And aloe vera, if it's good for surface inflammation, it's good for internal circulation. I also like strong green drinks. If people can tolerate wheatgrass, that's fine. I've used powdered green magma with patients over the years. It's a barley grass extract, which is highly palatable. You know, something can be really good for you, but if people have no compliance and don't take it, it's worth nothing. I found over the years people are happy to take green magma. It comes in tablets also. Wheatgrass is even going to be a little better, but it's harder for a lot of people to take. Probiotics are very beneficial. Some people do really well with fermented foods like a miso, some with sauerkraut, but not necessarily. Some of those foods cause more gas and a little more inflammation. So there's a whole dietary part of this, I think, which has to be addressed, because you can just keep treating and treating it as a superficial, non-internal disharmony. And you might have a long-term client, but you're not going to see the clinical results you're after. Now, from a clinical point of view in East Asian medicine, there's a couple of techniques which are really good for relieving the inflammation. One of these is going to be therapeutic cupping, where you put cups on the body. You can find there's going to be general pain. There's usually going to be an epicenter of pain. We're going to look to find this epicenter. We can place a cup over it. There's a style of cupping called sliding cups, where you lubricate the skin and you create the suction, and then you slide the cup. And you can go with the muscle fiber, and you can go cross fiber also. And you'll see it'll look like skid marks on people's bodies. And this is where you're releasing inflammation that's trapped in that tissue, causing the fibromyalgia discomfort. And you start to release that. Okay.
I have a question. For people, we mentioned earlier how they may be so sensitive to touch, they may not even want massage. How would you be able to implement cupping for individuals who had that level of sensitivity?
You can do like cupping and just set it in place. And so it's almost going to feel just like your clothes. I mean, some people might not even tolerate that, but that's a possibility. But I've had pretty good clinical response with severe fibromyalgia. With the cups. Now there's an even more a folky old technique of Chinese medicine called gua sha, which is what we call a scraping technique, where we lubricate the skin and then we use a smooth edge of like a lid from a jar, or there are some specialized tools, and we literally scrape, and this can give a dramatic release. And so you're really changing the biochemistry of the tissue underneath the skin, where you're releasing this stored toxin, the stored inflammation, the pathogenic factors, and you're helping create release. And oftentimes with that and with cupping, people exhibit almost an immediate reduction of pain. Okay. Usually with fibromyalgia, you can get away with hand reflexology and foot reflexology. So you can do these dynamic treatments where you treat the whole body through a part of the body, which both of these provide. Therapeutic bathing, baths rich in mineral salts, just soaking in hot tubs with Epsom salts or Dead Sea salts. This can be very, very, very helpful to also. But fibromyalgia is a chronic condition. It doesn't relieve overnight. And at the beginning, I talked about using medications for fibromyalgia. I mean, the antidepressants are used, pain medications, opioids are used, a variety of things. They will give temporary relief often for some people, but they're making the body more toxic, and they're going to be occupy the liver physiologically to break down the drug, and the liver's just going to get more and more stagnant and toxic, and the whole system's going to be affected. So it's a long-term condition. You don't catch fibromyalgia. Its own etiology occurs over a long period of time. I have seen clinically dramatic improvement, not necessarily pain-free, but much more reduction in pain and return to normal activities. Focus returns, foggy head gets cleared up, migraines diminish, gastrointestinal function works better, and there's more of a sense of well-being. But it's a tough one.
Thank you so much, Rick.
My pleasure.
Now, that was Rick Gold. You can learn more about any of the Eastern medicine points he was talking about with a simple Google search. And Rick also develops music for meditation. And you can learn more about that music at www.metamindfulnessmusic.com. And his work there is to help facilitate meditation and mindfulness. So now I'm going to bring in Walt Fritz, who will give us his thoughts from the perspective of a physical therapist who specializes in evidence-informed myofascial release. Welcome, Walt.
Thanks for having me, Haley.
So talk to me about fibromyalgia.
Oh, fibromyalgia. Okay. So I'm going to share this with you, and I tend not to share it with my patients because it sounds a little disrespectful, but I mean it in good faith. One of the first things that I try to do when somebody tells me they have fibromyalgia is basically forget that they told me they have fibromyalgia, basically do the childish equivalent of sticking my fingers in my ears and go blah, blah, blah while they talk about their fibro, right? I certainly want to respect the fact that they've been given that diagnosis. It has meaning to them. They're suffering from a lot of widespread pain. But from the perspective as the physical therapist and manual therapist, one of the things I want to know is, well, how can I help you today? There's probably a really good chance that I can't do anything about pervasive pain throughout your body, despite what some people may say. I want to know, what can I do for you today, right? If you could leave this session with me having you help with something, or me help you with something, what would it be? What's the biggest fire I can help you with? And I try and redirect the conversation a little bit from the largeness of the diagnosis of fibromyalgia to the singularity of how does it affect you, right? The quality of life. If you could leave here today, what would it be that I could help you with, right? And I often find that it moves them away from the cliff of, I have this pervasive body-wide pain issue, to, you know what, it's my left elbow that really bothers me. That's the biggest thing that's really bothering me most. And it reframes the conversation to a place where we can actually get down to something and really say, okay, how can I help you today? And you know, once we sort of get over that hurdle, then you know, it to me it becomes a simple part of my physical therapy manual therapist evaluation. Let's take a look at your elbow and see how I can help you today.
So what you're saying makes a lot of sense. When you have a problem that's vague and big and overwhelming, it's almost like, where do you start? And
yeah,
that becomes a critical kind of paralyzing piece. Whereas if it's specific and narrow and tangible and right in front of you, there's something to do. There's something actionable.
Absolutely. You know, in my practice, I, like many practitioners, I have a patient history form. You know, the patient hopefully fills that out before they come into my clinic. And, you know, one of the first things on that page is, what's the primary reason you came here today? And they might write fibromyalgia, and I'm going to have to ask some more questions to say, okay, within that diagnosis, within that problem, what's the biggest problem? What's the biggest functional limitation that creates for you? And I'm gonna sort of hold their hand and try and get them to a place where hopefully we can have that conversation about how does it affect you? What does it affect? What does it keep you from doing in terms of quality of life? And how can I help you with that? If we can't get past that place of this is my whole body, often I'm not sure if I'm the person for them.
And do you have any like anecdotal stories or experiences working specifically with this condition that are memorable to you or that feel like they put forth a particular point or example?
Yeah, I think I do. I'm going to back up from the question just a second. My caseload pretty much is populated by the bell curve of patients, meaning some patients I see for a very short period of time. I'm able to help them or I'm not able to help them. We find that out pretty quickly and they move on. I have the middle range, the bulk of the bell curve, who I see for a moderate time period. And I'm like every therapist out there. I have long-term people who come and see me because maybe they like what I do. Maybe they found that what I do is helpful. I don't like to create a long-term relationship with anybody in terms of dependency, but some patients find that the work that we do together is helpful. Some of it is the fibromyalgia patient. And when they come and see me, it's like, well, okay, today, how can I help you? And that's, I think, the most memorable ones are the folks who use me, if you will, in that way, or use our relationship to say, you know, well, last time it was this and that seemed helpful, or maybe it didn't, but today it's the headache piece, or it's the arm pain, or it's the foot pain. And it's like starting over each time to say, okay, how can I help you today? And I think that's probably my most memorable anecdote is the folks who have had that sort of relationship that's been built on trust and results over the years for them.
All right. Thank you, Walt.
Sure.
So that was Walt Fritz. And if you want to learn more about Walt and his approach or his seminars, you can find more at waltfritz.com. So now I'm going to bring in Meredith Stevens, who will give us her thoughts from the perspective of a physical therapist, structural integrator, and Pilates expert. So welcome, Meredith.
Thanks for having me, Haley.
So let's talk about fibromyalgia.
All right. Well, I've worked with many people with fibromyalgia over the years. And the first thing that comes to mind is that fear of movement that develops with people with fibromyalgia. They might have a history of moving and it has created pain that has resulted in days of them, you know, needing to rest and becoming more fearful of moving, which creates this cycle of more anxiety, more pain, more depression. And so working with them to really help to get them moving, because we know there's so much research right now out there about the positive effects of exercise for so many things, for the depression in particular, for pain, for anxiety. So one of the things that I work with is trying to find a way to incorporate movement into their daily lives. And it might be planned movement. I love things like Tai Chi, which are very slow and very mindful. I have worked a lot with people with my Pilates equipment. Again, slow, mindful movement. We use that idea of pain, stopping for the pain. So if they start to move, if they experience some pain, they let themselves stop, reset, continue on. If the pain continues, then let's take it down a notch or let's try something different. So that they know they're in control and that they are now starting to manage their movement and their pain symptoms. The other thing I do a lot is work, you know, I say this when I teach all the time, when all else fails, if you do not know what to do with somebody, teach them to breathe. Because breathing, so often, if you're anxious, if you're depressed, your breath pattern gets altered. And that can actually create more anxiety, more depression, changes in your physiology, you know, your pH levels change and so on. So just teaching somebody how to breathe mindfully, get them out of the chest breathing, get them out of the breath holding, get them out of hyperventilation, can do a world of good. So when I say, you know, if you have somebody and you're just thinking, what am I going to do? Start with breath, start with mindfulness. And that can really do a lot to help with the anxiety, with pain, with fear, and get them to start moving them in shorter bouts, slow, deliberate, small. Help them with things, choose things that they like. You know, it may be water. It may be just gentle walking. A lot of people, I've had a lot of success with things like Tai Chi or Qigong, where it's a slow, gentle movement that they're now starting to be able to see, I can do this. I have success. I don't have to have pain every time I move. And that really can start them on a process of recovery and being able to incorporate more motion and have a more healthy lifestyle.
So I want to talk a minute about the psychology of movement and pain. Because one of the things I keep hearing you repeat around this movement is that it's slow.
Yeah.
And that the pace of the movement actually plays a really important role in making it accessible for people who have encountered pain with movement. I'm assuming here, and I'd either like your confirmation or at least a thought back on it, that by being slow, it allows for it to feel like that you won't overshoot, or if you do, it'll be very slight, and so that the repercussions will be small. It's like driving a car 5 miles an hour can make a big difference in the fender bender that you get into. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you know, so often I people have this misguided thing. Oh, well, I want to start moving, so I'm going to run. And it's like, oh my goodness, that probably wouldn't be the best choice for you. So working with controlled, slow, gliding, deliberate, flowing movement, all those kind of adjectives where the motion, one motion feeds into the other. Also incorporating the whole body. So, you know, I did mention things like Tai Chi, but doing things where their whole body is weight shifting and moving, using imagery, the idea of shifting your body like shifting sands or like water flowing. Imagery can be so powerful in the quality of the movement and how they physically respond to the movement as well. It becomes very meditative and can help stimulate that parasympathetic response in the body.
And so ultimately we're trying to change not only, or help them influence and change, not only what movements are available to them, but how they feel about those movements as well.
Mm-hmm. Because now we've become so conditioned that movement is equated with pain. So we're trying to break that. And then, you know, as they start to have success with that, then start to incorporate more functional type activities that then can be carried over into daily living. You know, so often I work with people who they say, oh, I can't do the things I usually do because it hurts. So we backtrack this and get them moving and then get things into more functional activities. I teach classes at my studio. I call it painless movement. And some of the movements start very slow like that, but then I do silly things like I say, you know, we're going to pick up the cat and put it on the shelf. And it's very slow and very glidey, but you're starting to now incorporate functional movements with good body mechanics in a very flowing manner, using things like gravity, the momentum and the ground reaction force to help facilitate movement.
All right. Thank you so much, Meredith.
Thank you.
So that was Meredith Stevens. And if you want to learn more about her work, you can check out her website at www.bodyworksds.com. And she teaches Anatomy Trains workshops, which you can find out at the Anatomy Trains website. So Meredith was our last guest of the day. But before I let you go, I wanted to share some of my observations I had from this episode. The first is that myofascial pain syndrome is not the same as fibromyalgia, and that tender points are distinct from trigger points. The fact that these different points in the past have been confused or believed to be the same thing shows how our understanding of conditions continue to evolve and get better. This is especially helpful when considering that tender points are what we find in fibromyalgia, and they don't respond to the same technique that we as manual therapists use for trigger points. So I think it's also very helpful to understand that fibromyalgia is a nervous system condition. And it's when the system gets primed to convey messages about pain. The pain is real, but the source of the pain could be a misinterpretation by the nervous system. I also found the issue with people who have fibromyalgia not getting much sleep, or stage 4 sleep, as it was specified, was really interesting. It's also helpful to know that massage therapy tends to have the best results once a client has had 5 sessions. And this statistic is really good for setting expectations. And once again, the positive effects of movement and exercise were touted. And once again, it was interesting to hear how therapists navigate those waters with clients when movement and pain often coincide. I'm thinking specifically now about how Meredith Stevens handled the conversation around communication around movement. Now, lastly, I think the condition of fibromyalgia is a great example of how someone might feel pain in a specific area, let's say their shoulder, for instance. And yet orthopedic muscular work might not be useful. However, manual therapy still has the capacity to provide help, support, and perhaps relief to the client. And what they need from us is pressure that feels good to them and helps relax their nervous system. This in turn can promote better quality sleep and more pain-free movement. It seems so simple and rudimentary, but sometimes it is the simple things, the foundational things, the most basic elements of our profession that have the greatest impact. Again, I hope you really enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to being back in 2 weeks. Well, that's a wrap for this episode. A big thank you to all of my experienced and esteemed panelists. I continue to be honored that they let me poke and prod their minds on these subjects. It wouldn't be possible without them. Please do rate us on iTunes or through whichever podcast app that you listen to us, and feel free to visit us on Facebook and suggest new topics for me to cover in future episodes. Until then, be well.